Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. Joining me once again on our pattern of reading from Memories of an African Son on Tuesdays is our very own Marianne Simpkins, editor-in-chief of the Prime Life Times, director of creative services. Hey, that's three times I got it right. You know, it's going to stick, I think.
I don't know who I'm the director of, but it's okay. I like it.
Well, we're establishing that team.
Okay,
you know, it's
okay.
A high-powered, high-quality team that you'll be managing.
Well, you know, when you have a small staff, everybody can be a director.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, yesterday we initiated our May edition of the Prime Life Times.
Yeah.
What I mean by initiated, we read just read one story and talk about the Yoder's Dinner Club that'll be happening at the end of the month on the 29th. And you'll be hearing radio spots, and I'll even have Anna record something inviting everyone to come down because 10% of the meal costs on the 29th.
Isn't Yoder's a pretty well-known name in that area?
Yeah, very well. And in fact, now that we have the papers in three different locations in Arthur, at Yoder's, mm-hmm. at Penn Station, and at the health food store, hopefully a lot of people are going to start seeing this and show up on that day.
I started to say, what is Penn Station?
Yeah, Penn Station. Yeah. An individual, I think, purchased it or built it.
Okay.
It's kind of a multi-use facility where they hold church services and revivals and gatherings and meetings. And they just wanted to use it to the Lord's glory, I guess.
That's great.
And they've had, like, when concerts are coming into town. So a lot of different uses.
It's got kind of a neat ring to it as a name.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Go down to Penn Station.
Yeah. Probably a reason for that
yeah.
name.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Sandwich shop called Penn Station
too. Yeah, but, something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, so the Prime Life Times is out, and we read a story yesterday, many more stories.
Oh,
this, again, is the most pages we've had in any of the editions. This is our sixth full month. Working on number seven already.
Yes,
getting
we are.
Ads for this June edition, and never a dull moment here. Oh, okay. So Tuesdays we're going to have a pattern for some mm-hmm. time to read from your book, available here at the Great News Radio Center.
Yeah,
$15, which is well worth it. Every single person that's purchased a copy has said they really loved it.
Thank you.
Well written, and we want to share a new story with you today. I think you're going to read from A Light in the Darkness.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to give us a little background.
Well,
this is about in the middle of the book, too.
It is. It's actually at the end of the stories of our time out in the bush country, right before we go to Ghana. So
now, the bush country, for those maybe unfamiliar, that you're an author and an editor-in-chief and a director of creative services, what is the bush country like?
Yeah.
Is that former president's landowner or something?
Wow, that's interesting. No. No, it's the what was at that time the place where the African people had been moved. Hundreds of miles, hundreds and hundreds of miles of wild country. Many, many, many animals. We had to dig wells. We had to it was very bad roads, if you wanted to call them that, fording rivers. It was quite a adventure on the savannah.
And this is where the government moved them?
Yes.
So this is almost like what happened in America with the Indians,
very much so.
Like reservations. Oh, I always, when we refer to the bush country, as just like out in the boonies.
Uh-huh. Well, so, like the outback in Australia. Yeah. Yeah.
But this was literally where the government decided, okay, we're going to displace or move you over into these areas.
Right. The bush country's bigger than, I mean, it was huge.
Yeah.
But that is the place they moved them to.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And you and your parents, your parents were called to be missionaries.
Yeah. My dad was a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And a pastor and a Bible college professor and so forth. And, yeah, you decided to go do this.
And your ages during the time when you were in Africa were from what to what?
We started leaving when I was 8. I think we left that next January, or right in the winter. It was a very cold day when we left. And the last time I came back, I was going on 15.
So
I was 14.
Eight to 14.
14, really, yeah. So, 8 is when we started, and that's when the book starts, is me hearing.
I think I remember that story. That was a couple of years ago when you started reading this, that the raindrops on the roof and adjusting to the environment. And
it was something. It was really a remarkable adventure because I grew up without television and all that. All we had was in the evening, we could sometimes get the Voice of America out there no telephones to the outside world, nothing.
So. And this story is probably about 2 or 3 years into you being there?
Probably, actually, this one was about 2 years, yeah, okay. into being there.
See, I'm tracking.
Yeah, you are.
I'm up to speed.
You are, because this first sentence says I was 10 years old. So you are on it.
All right.
Okay.
A light in the darkness.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 31. I was 10 years old when I saw my first shipwreck, what was left of it anyway. The actual wreck had happened some 400 years earlier. My father and I walked on the white beach of Mozambique that hot, sultry morning on the east coast. On the coast of East Africa, a place of astonishing natural beauty, a place that can take your breath away. The glowing azure sea ran right up to pristine white sands that stretched for miles. Further down, near the dunes, with their feathery green growth, lions roamed and would come right down to the sea in the evening. In the midst of this beauty, tied down with massive and rusted iron chains, with links the size of a man's waist, was the old ship. Along with the old lighthouse, still in use above it, the ship was the one sightseeing item the entire region seemed to claim as noteworthy to visit. Little did they know that for those unaccustomed, of which there were few of us then, the very air and dramatic beauty were much more enticing. In its day, the ship had been a Portuguese seafaring vessel. Nearby residents talked vaguely of a treasure it had carried, their story a remnant of some nearly forgotten tale handed down to them. History books speak of ships failing often on that blue coast of Mozambique, one with priceless treasure from ancient China in it. Old stories, the facts lost now in the cold depths of a cold sea. I stood under the steaming African sun as it cast shimmering heat waves over the ocean and stared at the old thing. Whatever it had been, and whoever had been on it, things had gone badly. Very badly indeed for them. And here we were, so many long years later, staring at what had been their disaster. Their story, untold and unknown, dying. A long, slow death by ocean, sand, and heat. Shipwreck. I recently read that one of the largest treasure troves ever found had been discovered in a 19th century shipwreck in the Atlantic, where countless ships went down. It was filled with bountiful treasure sent to buy the loyalty of the Italian Duke of Savoy. It never made it. I don't know how this 17th century story with the Duke eventually turned out, but the treasure, to buy his agreement, is currently being retrieved from the bottom of the sea. How many of us, with our lives, our ships, filled with treasure of a different kind, wreck our boats on the shoals and the jagged rocks of life? The great lighthouses that speckle this planet, that rise high above the ground on so many shores, were put in place in a time when light, not computers or radar, but light was the best and safest thing to be guided by. The sun, the moon, the stars, and the lighthouses. A seaman far out to sea saw that lighthouse beacon, and then he knew where it was safe, where it was not, and how to maneuver in the darkness he was forced to make his way through. We live in a world that appears in certain ways to also be heading toward shipwreck. Oh, that the church and its people would shine out again, shine out to a world nearing shipwreck. This way, go this way, and not over there, where the rocks will destroy you and tear you to shreds. Pay attention to the light. We care for your safety, for the safety of your soul. We have heard the old stories of pirates and scoundrels who grabbed hold of the lighthouse and turned the great light off and misled the sailors, or walked the reefs with lanterns to deceive the sailors and lure them to rocky and dangerous land. I wonder, how many of us have allowed scoundrels and less than well-intentioned folks to mislead our churches, our families, or our children. There were few things more serious to the seafaring communities in those long-ago years than the lighthouse staying in safe, rightful hands. Otherwise, disaster would strike. Thieves would make off with the goods, and good and decent people would be shipwrecked. It's of great importance to us, too, that the lighthouse of the church stays in hands that will look out for the best, for the people, will shine the light of truth and valor, and will not be ashamed for the light to knife through the darkness like a penetrating signal of hope. When I remember that wild coast of Mozambique with its ever-important lighthouse, I am convicted of the importance of light in the darkness. There are people at sea, drifting. As Jesus said, no one lights a lamp and hides it in a clay jar or puts it under a bed. Instead, they put it on a stand so that those who come in can see the light. Luke 8:16. Father, let my light so shine before people that they are drawn to you. Teach me never to be ashamed of who you are and of what you have done for us. Give me a courageous heart. Save me from treachery, from misguided thinking, whether my own or from others. Let your word be a light to my feet and bring me safely home.
Every time you'd say that word, scoundrels.
Scoundrel.
You scurvy dog, I'll hang you from the yardarms.
Oh, wow. You are good at that.
Do we use scoundrels very much anymore?
Scoundrels. I don't think so.
That's a classic word.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah, yeah, it is. Pirates. Scoundrels.
Light in the Darkness in the book titled Memories of an African Son by Marianne Simpkins. Available here at the Great News Radio Center. You can get it online, too. Google search it.
Amazon. Yeah.
Amazon. Wow. Hey, we probably have time for another one.
Okay. All right. We can do
that.
You
want to pull that off?
Sure.
Or do you want to jump into the Prime Life Times?
Okay, let's do that.
Prime Life Times? Okay, we only got to read the cover story yesterday if you open up the May edition of the Prime Life Times. Now, you should have, if you have a radio on, you should have your Prime Life Times paper right next to
honestly,
the radio,
Mark.
You know, so when we refer to it, you can pull it up and look at it along with us.
Which we will be referring to it.
Yes, every Monday and some Tuesdays. But yesterday we read the story under our series, Delicious Destinations, Flesser's Candy Kitchen.
Yeah.
But you were saying something about a poem or...
Well, two things, actually. Okay. There's an article I would love to read for people. I just think it's just great.
Is this Section B or Section A?
Section B. We have this paper all spread out here.
Wow, let me grab Section B. Oh, yeah, I love the front page of Section B, but we'll read that maybe another time.
Oh, yes. But I am going to read this short poem, if that's okay.
Okay, it's a poem. What page?
A 16.
Oh, A 16. Back to A.
Well, you got a lot going on there, Mark.
Yeah, got to keep up. Okay.
Hopefully we have time for both. Okay, I just want to read this. Caroline Hellrigal from Loda, Illinois, sent this in. I love it.
Sweetie?
Yeah, she is. Okay. It's called Ode to Overalls.
And what page again?
A 16. It's on the very back.
Oh, 16. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Ode to Overalls by Caroline Hellrigal. The overalls, the signature of the farmer, what he always wore at home, to the store, with stains of paint and grease and oil from tilling the soil. They tell of all of his thrifty life, the farmer and his wife. Oh my gosh, Oshkosh Bagosh hangs behind the door, to be worn no more. The mister's, now 94, no longer does chores, his back much too sore. Oh, now let me read you the rest of this.
Okay.
Copyright Caroline Hellrigal, Loda, Illinois. Used by permission. Her poem, along with her husband's overalls, are in the Iroquois County Historical Museum, Watseka, Illinois.
Oh,
I love that.
Great.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, she stopped in here, the center,
a month
or so back, and she said she had some poetry. I said, oh, submit it, send it in. And so we had a delightful conversation. She knew all about the different wars and battles.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, she has a great memory.
That's amazing.
Oh. Okay, so are we back to...
B5.
B5.
All right, I think this is a grand article.
Okay. Read away.
It's called The Art of Living. It's by Rita Blockman, who I have to say was selected as one of the top 20 outstanding women in East Central Illinois for her amazing contribution to the international adoption field.
Oh.
I know, she's quite something. Okay.
You go, girl. You go.
Okay, here is her article, The Art of Living. I recently had an operation and was incapacitated for a period of time. I found my thoughts drifting down a negative path as I looked at the walker and other items that are not usually part of my daily existence. I started projecting ahead to thoughts of things that might never happen in my life and to experiences over which I have no control. That was when I took action. Fortunately, I decided to accept an invitation from a new friend, Judith, a.k.a. Judy, who possesses a high degree of positivity. Being in the same room with her puts me in a wonderful state of mind. I felt compelled to ask whether I could interview her. Luckily, she accepted the invitation. Judith Langhoff, 77 years young, taught elementary school for 25 years and enjoyed it immensely. At the end of that time, however, Judy walked out of the classroom and decided to welcome a new retirement phase of life with gusto. She had loved the children she taught, felt she had made an impact, and was proud of the work she had done. One accomplishment she particularly relished was having made opportunities for her young students to get exposure to art throughout her tenure. Judy firmly believed that children could benefit from creating something themselves and from having the opportunity to learn about various kinds of art. It was extremely important to Judy that she carefully think about how she wanted to spend her free time in retirement. She felt strongly that she wanted to be the learner at this stage of her life.
Hmm.
Judy began experimenting with different forms of art, and this experimentation fostered a whole new direction in her life. Retirement opened the door to a whole new world for me, she exclaimed. Judy initially began her exploration with weaving because she loved working with her hands. At one point in our conversation, Judy described how she loved the feeling of just being in the yarn store, where she admired all the beautiful colors of yarn and their unique textures. I could relate to her discussion about this, as I love to be in a music shop, surrounded by music, where I can explore piano books and sheet music and get lost in the process.
That reminds me of yesterday's comment where you love just being in gas stations.
Oh, good gracious.
Isn't it?
That
the music store? She likes the yarn store.
That doesn't sound nearly as impressive. Yeah, but I do. Okay. Judy joined a weaving group and later became group president. As time went on, she began experimenting with felting and also developed a love of making decorative baskets. One of the thrills of basket making, according to Judy, was collecting pine needles from the earth to begin the process. Additionally, Judy became a sensitive watercolorist, and I was fortunate enough to attend a reception that featured her paintings.
Hey, what's a sensitive watercolorist?
I don't know, but it sounds beautiful.
Okay.
Among Judy's other interests in retirement are cooking and gardening. I soon realized that all of Judy's hobbies involve a tactile sense. Arranging and putting together scents, fabrics, cooking, spices, and paints. These creative experiences please her, and they nurture her aesthetic sense and the family and friends around her. After I spent a delightful 2 hours with Judy, my mood changed drastically as I experienced her joy of life. I left her presence excited about trying new experiences in my retirement, different from the activities I engage in now. That is what retirement should be like, right? But first follow your intuition about what really satisfies you and touches your soul. The hobbies or activities you choose will help you transcend your reality into a more peaceful state of being and, as Judy said, will stop the world. This is one recipe to enable us to simply savor the art of living. And isn't that a lovely picture of her, of Judy?
Yeah, both of them have great smiles like they're active, engaged. You and I were talking about the other day, like positive energy. When you're around those people and you can kind of sense it or feel it.
It's catching.
Yeah. So.
That is so true.
And I love that Judy, in her retirement state of mind, said, now's the time for me to learn, to grow, to develop.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just kick back and go to Florida and sit around. Yeah. You get engaged.
Well, you can go
and
to Florida and do that, too, and
Be
engaged. But, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, she don't just sit around. Yeah.
So Rita started talking about herself and, you know, feeling a certain way, and then met this person, and then
changed,
wrote a little story.
Changed her whole energy. I know she's good at that. She and Cindy Guthrie, another writer, they're both good at just taking something small that just happened and really bringing it out, to fleshing it out to a lesson or to a thought that is very, very good. And, you know, there is some positive energy in gas stations. Mark, if you, yeah. you should put it down like that.
I was trying to think.
It's fun.
Actually, I know I'm on vacation when I'm in a gas station.
I know.
And I get my Charleston Chew candy bar.
Yeah.
Or I get those little... The Goetz caramel with the little white stuff in the middle of them.
Ooh, that's
then
like
I know
Memphis.
When I have one of those two, though, then I feel like I'm really on vacation.
Charleston
Chew are those Goetz cream, caramel creams or something.
Everybody's
called.
Sitting there listening.
Yeah. yeah,
so. But I was so disappointed when the whole card thing happened at gas stations where you don't even have to go in.
That's
sad.
You pay for it out there.
I know. That's
and
no
now
fun.
They have little televisions that you
like
sit there
it.
And you get to have the weather or the news or a little commercial.
I've met some great people in the gas station. It's a great place.
Well, Jason uses it many times. He prays for those divine appointments.
In the gas station?
No. Well, outside while they're pumping the gas, you kind of stand in there and you're
good.
Waiting it and you watch. And so he strikes up a conversation like, hey, I see your T-shirt says Jesus Save. Are you a follower of his?
And, that's great. I want to say something like that. I did something like that, but anyway.
we'll get another cup of coffee and maybe you'll start.
Okay.
Hey, I like the picture on the other page. Amazing animals, the alligator snapping turtle.
I know, didn't
by
it?
Our very Doesn't own it? Rob Seidenberg.
Look at that picture.
I know, that's fair. Oh, I love the cartoon. Somewhere where he says, you know, you grew up in the city.
Yeah, where is
if
that?
And you want to pet one of these things
got
or something.
Got that little kid going, I want to pet the turtle, Mama.
Yeah, it's a snapper. Anyways, that's another good thing. We're talking about the May edition of the Prime Life Times, available in over 150 area locations. You can find out more.
Yeah.
And those locations are listed at primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com. And you can actually read the whole paper online, but do it the old-fashioned way. Get it in your hands. You can pick it up and read it and pass it on to a friend. And it's in color, full color, so this is a great edition. It's two sections, section A and B.
You keep saying that.
28 pages. Wow. We started 6 months ago. It was 16 pages.
I know. We could do more.
Remember
but
with Bob Dickey? He was like, he had this vision of building. I said, no way. It's just not possible we could move that fast. And I think we're exceeding
it. We've outstripped it,
And, we could go with even four more pages with some more great content, but we need some advertisers.
Yeah.
So if you're a business or a service provider and you want to know how we can match you up with our great readers and great news radio listeners, give us a call, 217-367-7777. We can talk about it.
And be sure and read Joey's column. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
God's Bird Feeder.
Yeah, God's Bird Feeder, his Wayside Chapel.
I know. I love that.
Series.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Marianne Simpkins with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.
God bless you.